Hello, the internet, and welcome to Season 36, Episode 3 of Data Daily Zeitgeist for June 20th, 2018. Happy birthday to two of my best friends in the world, Chris and Jose. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Somewhere Over the Gray Bow, way up Geist. There's a Zeit that I heard of once in a Jack O'Brien. That is courtesy of Unreliable Narrator on Twitter, and I'm as a, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
Yo, microphone check, 1, 2, what is this? Miles of Gray with the Zeitgeist business. I float like gravity, my mom's in the academy. I got more rhymes than the Zeit Gang got family. No need to sweat by borrow to know the daily game. No shame in Zeit Gang, cause you know there ain't no lames. Miles upon miles upon miles is what I have. You wanna diss the Zeit Gang, but you still don't know the half. Wow, we had to spread our tribe wings today. Shout out to Dobby Juan Glass. On Twitter, at DobbyWanG for that one. That was in the hopper for a minute, my guy. That was, you submitted that May 4th, and I never forgot. And it felt right, so thank you, sir, for letting me rap.
I love that we both had songs that are so representative of, like, our generation, you know? Yeah. Like, you had Old School Tribe, and I had Judy. and we are thrilled to have, in our third seat, an author, a former gossip columnist, and the host of another How Stuff Works podcast that has come rocketing out of the gate called Committed. She is Joe Piazza.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Joe.
Hey. I'm really bummed that I don't have interest music.
I know.
That's fine.
Sorry. We
what's your song at karaoke?
Living on a Prayer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm real good at Living on a Prayer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe by the end of this episode.
Yeah.
I will get up.
Oh, please.
And do a little air guitar.
Wow. Oh.
And.
Okay. A true performer.
Yes. And by up, I mean up on the bar.
Yeah, we do have a bar in our recording studio.
Yep. It's only filled with Sprig Soda and LaCroix.
All right. We're going to introduce our listeners to you, Joe. But before we do that, we like to tell them what they're in store for, what stories we're going to cover today. So we're going to start out talking about a recent episode of your show, Committed, and how the human memory works or fails to work, and how that ties into various stories that are on our mind right now. We're going to talk about the latest on border separation, Corey Lewandowski's just dynamite drop-in on Fox News last night, the executive order that may be coming down the pipe, how people are making life hell for the people responsible for separating families at the border, and how people are profiting off of the practice of separating families and treating immigrants like shit. We're going to talk about the recently announced top 50 restaurants in the world list, the new EU rules on internet copyright that might essentially be a meme ban, and we're going to get a sports update on some sport. I'm not sure. Can't remember what we're going to talk about. But first, Joe, we like to ask our guests, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are as a human being?
Can you poison a baby by giving them too much cheese?
What?
See,
yes.
It's the only thing my kid wants to eat.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
I thought you had a loud neighbor baby, like, who you live next to.
Just throwing cheese through the window.
No, for those loud neighbor babies, you slip poison bacon under the door.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. Thankfully, no, you cannot poison a baby by giving them too much Baby Bell cheese.
So you thought, for a moment, you thought, this could be a dangerous amount of cheese.
This could be. I mean, it was a lot of cheese that I'd given my child yesterday. Yeah. I mean, he was going to turn into one of those Baby Bell balls.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, but no, he's safe. He's good.
Okay,
he's good. Yeah.
Alleged,
according to Google, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Healthy,
I think I've had cheese poisoning before, and it's just you don't go to the bathroom for, like, a week.
What do you mean cheese poisoning?
Cheese poisoning.
Just too much cheese. Just over cheese yourself.
When did you over cheese?
Just throughout my life. I love cheese.
Just throughout my
all
life.
All the time.
Hey, why am I on trial?
On Tuesdays.
Yeah, right.
Oh man, I love cheese.
Wait, so what was a moment where you ate something? Like, what? How much cheese was?
Have you ever eaten too much cheese and then, like, you don't have?
There's no such thing as eating.
Nothing's
too much
moving down there for, like, a couple weeks.
Well, when you say nothing's moving down there, what are you talking about?
You know.
Have you tried the squatty potty? ED?
Hey, Joe. Oh. I am talking about your
my
ED.
Well, that's a low blow.
Squatty potty has not given us any money, so we will not talk about squatty potty.
But, it's the most romantic Christmas present my husband got me last year.
That's so nice.
I know.
Joe, what is something you think is overrated?
Grown-ups riding electric scooters.
Okay.
Oh. I want it to end.
Are you talking about hoverboards or those stupid bird
No, everything
things?
About hoverboards is fantastic. I'm talking about birds.
The bird scooters.
The bird scooters and the Lime scooters.
Yeah.
And I just want it to stop. The sidewalks are crowded. The streets are crowded. And there are always people that don't know how to ride a scooter.
Right.
It's like
right.
It's like their first time on a scooter. And you're like, really?
What are the companies that are the main scourge up in the Bay?
Same.
Oh, it's same?
Yeah.
Same culprits?
Culprits up in the Bay. Yeah, and I just want it to end. And I also think that there's nothing less sexy than like a grown man riding a
right.
Riding
so
an
for
electric scooter.
Those of you out there who are fortunate enough to live in a city that doesn't have these bullshit scooters, there's an epidemic of rentable scooters that you just use an app to unlock and you can zip around all day and just leave it wherever
and
the
then
fuck
you throw
wherever you
want. You just like throw it on someone's lawn.
Yeah.
Right.
Like it's trash.
And it's amazing because they just appear overnight.
Yeah,
like they just one day, all of a sudden, my entire neighborhood was covered in these scooters, and people were just like zipping around on them.
I remember somebody sent me a picture on Twitter of the DC Metro, like the station had fucking scooters on the platform.
Yeah,
like on a subway. Like
on the subway.
They took it down the escalator.
Yeah, like and then they're just
they
like,
picked
oh
it up
fuck
and
it,
carried it down the escalator. I mean, I need it to
get from the bottom of the escalator to the train.
I don't know.
That's
and they're just there. So
that is an admirable level of laziness.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the one hand, I think it looks whack. I think it's annoying to have it all over your streets and sidewalks. On the other hand, so Miles, you and I were walking to lunch yesterday, and we witnessed a dude who was tweeting sleeveless and on one of those hoverboards. And he was like, at first, we were like, this guy is the problem with all of the world, with just the modern world in general. But by the time we had like walked halfway up the block, he was like four blocks away.
He was
and
so
I was
far
like,
gone.
Damn, dude. Like I think this
point.
Might be the future. Like,
yeah,
unfortunately.
You look like an asshole.
He was texting the whole time and just like fucking flying up the street.
Yeah.
It could just be like how people used to be with Bluetooth earpieces. You're like, dude, that's a dumbass look. And then like for a while, that was like the wave.
Right.
And now it's AirPods. I'm still anti-AirPod.
I'm anti-AirPod.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes. Also
anti-AirPod
overrated.
Also means I don't have enough money. But
I will say AirPods are like being anti-cell phone. And then once you have one, it really is the best product.
Yeah,
that
super producer
Apple
Anna Hosier was walking around the office like the second coming of Christ. Like, and I just put the phone anywhere and I'm cord free. And then you're like, what? Why you got all those wires, Jack?
Yeah, she looked at me. I had plugged in old Apple headphones, you know, the old school,
she's
into
heaving.
My computer. And she looked at me and was like, what is happening over there? Why do you have wires coming out of your ears? Like I was a fucking cyborg.
Yeah, right.
Like
you're Neo waking up in the real world.
But I don't think people should go all in like that. However, the AirPods are the best product that Apple has made since the iPhone.
Wow. It's
really, not yet. I'm not ready.
Don't
it's
know.
Really good.
I'll lose them.
But
I'll lose them.
Yeah.
I thought so too, and I did lose
and
one.
I feel like someone just robbed
me.
I just feel like you're looking to get robbed when you got that on.
Yeah, maybe.
Because that's like, yo, I got AirPod money. You know what I mean? If I still got them wired, you might be able to be like, oh, maybe
he doesn't
I'll leave this dude alone.
That dude don't have any money.
I'll press somebody with AirPods.
Mm-hmm.
Not if I'm on my hoverboard.
Catch up, loser.
They're not that fast.
A lightning fast 8 miles an hour.
No. Right. And finally, what is something that is underrated?
Raccoons. Raccoons.
Okay.
I watched that video of that raccoon climbing that skyscraper in Minneapolis so many times. And who would have thought that a raccoon could bring so much joy to so many people in such dark times?
It was such a triumph of the human spirit
it
or
was.
The raccoon spirit,
the raccoon
marsupial
spirit.
Yeah, because in the beginning when I saw it trending, I'm like, what the fuck is trending on Twitter? But then I saw it. At first, I was like, this is so stupid.
I know.
And then like
and then
later in the
in.
Day, they're like, yo, she still hasn't gotten up there.
Right.
And then I'm like, all right, well, let me see.
And she looks so tired.
So tired. Like all of us.
Right.
Tired.
Right.
Beaten down.
Yes. But still finds the resolve to keep ascending the tower.
Yep.
And I didn't know raccoons could climb the side of a tower
like
fucking Spider-Man.
They can.
their hands look like our hands, just smaller. Mm. So if our hands were smaller...
Oh my God, Jack, I just saw your hands for the first time. They are disgusting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They look like a raccoon's hands.
No, is this not what your hands look like?
No, they're not black.
They do have like little human-ish hands.
Well, yeah,
it's
of
weird.
Course.
Oh,
they
yeah,
got,
they do.
They got the thumbs and everything.
They wash things.
Yeah.
Yeah, they pull fruit out of the trash and they wash them. One, yeah. We were camping the other night and one climbed in the back of our Subaru.
Really? Oh.
Yeah, he did. He did.
That sounds like a Portlandia joke, but yes.
But it's not.
Yes.
It's not. I know. I am a goddamn cliche.
My mom, who's a huge possum proponent, advocate.
You're just going to stop at possum.
Yeah, my mom was a gigantic possum. We still don't know how. She's my mother, but genetically we do share the same genetic. Anyway, yes, she hates raccoons because she sees them like sun the possums in her yard and like take the food that she leaves out for the possums. So she's like, they're my nemesis. But I think she's coming around a little bit when she realizes, you know, she tends to just put a human story onto animals and then is like, oh, if she sees a raccoon with its baby, she'll probably instantly be like,
she'd love it.
It was a single mother.
Now, yeah. If you see a raccoon without hair, have you seen that?
No.
Oh my God.
Wait.
Oh my God.
Oh my. You guys in the corner puking his guts out.
Why wouldn't the raccoon have hair? Like, did someone shave?
I think it must have like fallen out or it got
like raccoon alopecia.
Oh no. Like yeah, yeah. A raccoon with no hair.
It's pretty scary looking. But
hey. Yeah, it looks like a broke bear.
Oh.
Yeah. And
Jack, we didn't have to start this.
There have been raccoons without
so
hair that have been you know, confused with mythological creatures. They're like, it's a, you know, swamp ape.
Oh, right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because raccoons without hair, scary looking. Finally, Joe, I know I said finally before, but I just like to tease up the finally. What is a myth? What's something people think is true that you know to be false?
So I just learned this yesterday. The fact that porn stars, a lot of people think they're not just like us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here to say they are just like us. I did an interview for Committed with these two married porn stars yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was expecting to walk into their house and for it to be like crazy party porn central.
Mm-hmm. Just stink of sex.
Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't. I mean, it was just the coziest little place I've ever been.
Wow.
Mid-century modern.
There was the Walter Isaacson biography of Da Vinci on the counter, which I'm also reading. And the wife was hand-raising baby chickens in the bathroom,
yeah.
Which I would also like to do. So I was like, wow, porn stars, they are just like us.
How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a tendency in this country to look at porn stars as just these other people,
mythical creatures.
How could they have sex on camera, as we saw with just like Rudy Giuliani's comments on Stormy Daniels?
I get all
of
my judgments on people's sexual mores from Rudy Giuliani. So
oh, yeah.
I can't agree with you guys on that.
Well, that's why you started wearing AirPods, because you saw how he was rocking them. And you were like, yeah, I fuck with this.
People need to look up a Google image search Rudy Giuliani with AirPods, because he has them in backwards somehow.
And, like, upside down and backwards.
No, he did marry his cousin.
He did. He absolutely did. That's cool. Well, I'm going to look forward to that episode of Committed. And I actually, for a first story, wanted to talk about your second episode of Committed, because it's on a subject that I've been hearing just really interesting podcasts about recently. The second episode was about a couple where the wife had sort of surgery that hampered her short-term memory.
Yeah. So she had a stroke on the operating table, and it gave her this form of amnesia where she can't make new memories. She can make some memories. She can't make them very easily. And there was that terrible Adam Sandler movie, 50 First Dates, about this kind of amnesia.
Yeah, terrible. I don't like that movie at all.
Shout out to my homie, Nick's dad, who was in that.
Changing my Facebook profile.
That movie was No Overboard, which is the best movie about amnesia.
About temporary amnesia.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this is a real life story about that. And how do you have a marriage when one person can't remember what's happening? And the most incredible thing about their story is they've used this to have the most memorable marriage ever.
Mm.
And it means that every day they're going into it trying to find a way to make Gwen remember.
Right.
So they've started running marathons. Yasser, her husband, has become this world-famous competitive eater who can eat more cannolis than anyone in the world. Gwen enrolled in Juilliard. And
wow.
Yeah, she just seems like a wildly talented person.
And also wildly, wildly happy. So she keeps telling me that she thinks she's a lot happier now. I mean, this terrible thing happened to her, and it's been hard.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But She doesn't hold grudges. She lives very much in the present. I asked her if she journals and writes down when her and her husband fight, and she says, no, why would I want to remember it? And I think that's a really interesting lesson for all of us.
Yeah. Right, yeah. But how do you win? Come on. Yeah. You got to win the argument. Like,
well, that scoreboard is going to look pretty fucked up at the end of the month.
Right.
Take all those L's.
Yeah.
And so it was just fascinating how to build a marriage when you have this thing that you think could completely destroy a relationship, and actually it ends up making it a lot more meaningful and a lot better.
Yeah. You, so your background is that you and your husband traveled around the world and interviewed couples all over the world about how they make a marriage work, right?
We did. Yeah. I mean, because I was like old when I got engaged, and I had no idea how to be a wife. I didn't really want to be someone's wife. That word kind of sucks. Mm-hmm. And I was a travel editor at the time. I mean, I wasn't like, you know, rich and famous or anything. To travel all over the world, but I was working at Yahoo. So thanks guys for paying for me to research my book. And yeah, we travel around asking polygamous tribes and Orthodox Jews in Jerusalem and really fancy French women, how do you do this marriage thing? How does this work?
Right.
And, you know, kind of debunking the myths and expectations around marriage. And it was a blast. And it turned into a book called How to Be Married, and now a podcast called Committed.
Yeah. And it's such a good podcast. And you learn something about marriage and relationships in every episode, but you also learn something. Like, the thing I took away from the memory episode is just that this is now the second time that I've heard a story about somebody with a short-term memory loss or impaired short-term memory who is an amazing long-distance runner. And it really gives you some insight. I don't know, like, if you guys have ever run, but like, I used to run marathons, and like, it, when I first heard that, it changed how like I thought about it, because it's really your memory and like being able to think about like how much pain you were in a minute ago is like part of what gets you down. It's like the weight of all the pain you're in, mm-hmm. as opposed to just like being in the moment and being able to just like, okay, so just focus on getting to the next moment.
I guess. How much our minds mess us up.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Like, if we can just get out of our heads,
yeah,
we would be so much happier and also better at everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about the other two podcasts that I was referencing that had interesting things on memory. So the first was just an interview by the founder of Vox with Jane Mayer, who is the investigative journalist at the New York Times. She's written the definitive account of the Koch brothers called Dark Money. She wrote the definitive account of Clarence Thomas and the Anita Hill trial. And it was just like one thing she said. She said that all these people, all these horrible people that she's found stuff out about, believe that they have been tremendously wronged. Like, the way that these stories exist in their mind is that they're able to hide the bad thing they're doing from other people, but they're also able to hide it from themselves. And they construct these elaborate narratives in which what they're doing is the same as what other people are doing, and they're just being unfairly called out. And the founder of Vox like had this assumption that the Kochs had embraced their sort of, I think he called it their boogeyman role, because they are like the media boogeyman, and we, you know, think of them as these evil people who are steepling their fingers. And she was like, oh no, they're actually very sensitive about how negatively they're being portrayed.
Right, right.
And they are doing all this charity to counter that, which is okay. That's great. But yeah, everybody basically thinks they're the good guy. That has constantly popped up in my mind ever since I heard it, because of, you know, the constant news cycle we're dealing with.
Yeah. Well, it's self-preservation too. Like, how could you look at yourself and know if you've done all that wrong and then be like, yeah, I'm fucked up.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you would have to be like, the only way you keep it moving is to begin to rationalize and create, just be like, no, see, fucking everybody's against me.
Yeah.
And see, what I've been doing is right. So fucked up, fuck all that.
Yeah. You have to be the hero of your own narrative.
Yeah.
Right.
Or you lose your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, that is true regardless of who you're talking about. And even if it seems like, well, surely the Koch brothers know that they're doing this just to make the world a worse place so that they can make more money. They have no clue that that's what they're doing. And then the other podcast that is sort of a more sympathetic memory fault is Malcolm Gladwell did an episode of his podcast a couple weeks ago about Brian Williams lying about being in that helicopter
that took fire. The brave soldier in Iraq?
Yeah. So he told on David Letterman the story of how he was in a helicopter that got shot out of the sky. And it turned out he was actually in a helicopter 30 minutes behind that one. It was like 30 minutes away. And then they both got pinned down in a sandstorm. And he basically immediately reported on it and, you know, got these people's stories. And he basically comes to the conclusion that Brian Williams honestly believed the version of the story that he told on Letterman. He had just told the story so many times from the people in the lead helicopter's point of view that he had like formed a memory around it, essentially. And like he was shocked when he found out that he wasn't in the thing. Dude, so
I can see logically what you're saying, but it's like being like, have you ever been in a car accident? You'll remember that shit. And if you haven't been in one, it would be hard for you to like sort of recreate all those emotions. I don't know. I mean, it seems like he.
Right. So, I mean, this is actually something I've written about and actually did like one of the early Crack podcasts about, because it's interesting when you study flashbulb memories. So people, we all know where we were, how we learned about 9/11, like every moment of that day, people, especially people who lived in New York. But the New School actually did an experiment with people who were in New York on 9/11, where they asked them in the days after the event, then 1 month after, then 6 months after, then 10 years after, to tell the story of what happened on that day. And their memories, the stories they told, changed drastically. But their confidence level remained extremely high, to the point that they would look at their old memory and be like, that's my handwriting, but I don't know why I wrote that, because that's not correct. Like, this story that I'm telling now is the true story. And part of the problem is that the more times we access a memory, the more opportunities there is for that memory to be corrupted. So if it's a thing like a flashbulb memory, you constantly are going back to it,
right?
And each time you go back to it, you're telling yourself a story and you're introducing new ways for that memory to get fucked up. There's actually a conspiracy theory that's based on this, because George W. Bush at one point talked about how so he talked about how before he went into the classroom to read My Pet Goat on the morning of September 11th, he watched on the news as the first plane hit the tower.
Right.
And people were like, well, that's impossible. Nobody saw that. He must have had a camera set up that was secretly showing him. And it's actually just that if you ask most people, do you remember where you were when you saw the first plane hit the tower? Like 40% of people will create that memory in their mind, because they do have the memory of the second plane hitting the tower. And
right,
so they create a new memory. And he was just basically confusing this thing, but he was telling the story as if it was like this crystal clear thing in his mind. So anyways, if you think that he was intentionally lying, I would suggest checking out that episode, because I honestly was a little skeptical going in.
Right.
But by the end, you're like, oh yeah, because he's like, you know, just killing himself. Like in this interview, like it's actually with Matt Lauer. Matt Lauer is like, how could you possibly do this?
You're disgusting.
Yeah, you disgust me. Oh. And Brian Williams
and
is just like.
And then he hits a button on the desk and is like, door's Brian, locked. You're trapped. Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm trapped in here.
But Brian Williams is like, it must have been ego. I must have been coming from a place of ego. But like, it's clear that like he's trying to explain his behavior without really understanding it.
Right.
And Matt Lauer is like, yeah, like just shitting on him.
Yeah,
like,
dude, just shut the fuck up. You're making me sick, man. Yeah. Get out.
So I don't know. Human memory is fallible.
That's true.
It's true. It's true. I mean, we create our own stories.
Right.
That's the thing.
And more than we think we do, even when we're fairly confident in the accuracy of our memories. Anyways, that was a big, long thing about memory. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after this. And we're back, and our main story that we're going to be talking about today is the same one we've been talking about a lot lately, which is the policy of the Trump administration of separating families at the border. And, you know, the hits just keep coming from this administration. Apparently, there is an executive order coming soon that will you know, intervene and change this policy.
Oh, wow. And I'm sure Trump will pat himself on the back.
Yeah, of course, because he's compassionate. But I don't want to miss out on a couple things that were coming from the right on this. So there was an appearance by Corey Lewandowski, Trump's homie who ran his campaign. Was he the first campaign?
Yeah, he's been with the he first met with Trump, I think, in like months before he even announced his campaign, and then eventually resigned in June of 2016 after, you know, he put his hands on a reporter.
Right. So anyways, he was on a Fox News show yesterday representing the right's position on this matter.
I mean, look, I read today about a 10-year-old girl with Down syndrome who was taken from her mother and put in a cage.
What?
I read about a did you say want to a 10-year-old with Down syndrome
what
being
I
taken
said
from
is
her
you
mother?
Can pick anything
how
you
dare
want
you?
Down, but the bottom line
how
is very clear.
How dare you?
Yeah.
You
cross
how absolutely
the border
dare you,
illegally.
You how
have
dare
given
you?
Up the...
No.
So how dare you? But yeah, that's where we're at. The right was in full damage control mode on this story this morning because the top headline on Breitbart was DHS, mother of separated child with Down syndrome, a witness in a smuggling case.
Wow.
So, wow.
Yeah. Okay.
So don't worry about that.
I'm pretty sure next time they're going to be like, well, does she even have Down syndrome?
Right.
How do you know? I think that would be the next rhetorical defense that that would apply.
Well, let's get a test. Let's figure it out.
Well, I'm also wondering if the next evolution of womp womp is going to be just the Charlie Brown teacher voice.
Right.
That's
yeah.
like womp 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 womp.
Well, that's
womp,
definitely
womp, womp,
what's going
womp,
on.
They're
in
just
going
to hit a button and that's what's going to play.
Right.
Yeah. It's really interesting, too, because, you know, there was already an outcry of the public not seeing where any of the girls or toddlers were being kept. Like, we had only been seeing young boys and like teenage men. And so, yeah, I'm curious to know, because clearly they are not taking care of people with disabilities. I can't imagine that they are. Or, like, there are even language barriers. Like, you know, there are a lot of different dialects in Guatemala and things like that.
Of course there are,
yeah. Where some of these people are not equipped to even communicate with kids who might not even be able to communicate in Spanish to some of these people. So it's to add to this that there are, you know, kids with disabilities being separated. And then, yeah, the reaction is just sort of like, boo fucking who.
Right.
I feel like we've just been
Does
melting Corey our
brains. Does Corey Lewandowski have kids?
I don't know. I have a hard time imagining, like, maybe they're just really focusing on the whiteness of their kids, or in this case, the fact that his kid doesn't have
Oh, he has four kids.
Oh, huh.
Four kids. I mean, it's amazing to me every time I hear someone who's an actual parent being so blasé about this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's insane. I mean, I know we talked about how you don't need kids to feel sympathy in this case, but having kids, I know in my case, like there was a New York Times story this morning about a 5-year-old boy who was separated from his father coming across the border and hadn't seen him in days. And just like talking about the ways that he's responding to that, and he carries around this drawing of his family that he made with like stick figures, and they had to get it laminated because otherwise it was gonna like come to pieces. But like you could like see he was acting out in a way that like a child typically does, but there was also this layer of trauma there, and like it was just impossible to take as somebody who like experiences normal children acting out like on a daily basis. It's impossible not to put your kid in that situation.
Right.
It was really dark, but obviously Corey Lewandowski is not listening to the New York Times podcast.
No.
Or has
his own definition of what child abuse is.
Right. Or what children are.
Right.
Because the right is thinking in the same way as Donald Trump that these children are the type of, you know, creature that infests, quote,
right,
unquote, the country. DHS secretary, we talked last week about, you know, what do you do in this case? Like, how do you resist? And some people had a pretty novel answer to that question. So Christian Nielsen had the balls to go to a Mexican restaurant yesterday. And
that's a fucking flex.
How hard do you have to be jonesing for some quesadillas?
Right. Yeah. When you're like, I'm the face of like immigrant xenophobia, just disgrace policy of this
but
country.
I
yeah.
need that guacamole
right.
so bad.
But I love guacamole.
So some protesters accompanied her into the restaurant and started shouting her down. I think we have some audio of them.
We call on you to end fair
And abolish ICE!
Abolish ICE! Abolish ICE! Shame!
Yep, tell her.
Shame!
But yeah, so she, you know, spent the first 10 minutes of being shouted at looking at her phone, doing the, like, well, hopefully they just
hopefully
leave
go away.
If
hopefully,
I ignore them.
Maybe they'll think I'm a different person.
Right. And then she just left the restaurant. So I do think that people went above and beyond to find ways to make people's lives uncomfortable who were, you know, making this policy possible. And now, like we said at the top of this segment, it appears as though the president is going to intervene and pass some executive order that will keep families together. Unfortunately, it looks like it will detain them indefinitely.
Oh, is that the newest reporting about it?
That's what the New York Times report said this morning. I'm not sure if it's been updated, but
right.
It's a Haberman joint. So a lot of anonymous sourcing from people, quote, familiar with the president's thinking. But yeah,
I think. Seemed like before a lot of the reporting was like the president is dug in on this. And he's
right.
not
I mean,
willing
as
to
recently
budge.
As
yesterday.
Last night.
Yeah. Yes. Maybe yeah. 3 hours ago.
3 hours ago. Yeah. When I woke up this
yeah.
morning.
Everyone was
yeah.
like, I don't know. Yeah. Looks yeah. like he's ready to do this thing.
Congressional Republicans went in, met with him, and they came out being like, yeah, I don't know. He was just totally unclear about whether he was going to respond or
right.
change anything. And now it seems like maybe one of these many things got through to him.
I know he's going to pat himself on the back when he announces this too. And
oh,
he's going to
yeah.
say, I mean, look, the Democrats wouldn't deal. So I had to solve this terrible crisis. And it'll be completely framed like that.
Absolutely. And he's going to throw like a freedom rally. For
yeah,
this.
Right. Exactly. It's just,
and then like, the Philadelphia Eagles aren't going to show up.
Again. Right. Exactly. And then Kirsten Nielsen can go get her Mexican food again. But yeah, I just, the pressure really needs to be applied even more now, despite whatever, even if there's an executive order ending this, like these people acted in a way that completely shows their lack of character. And
absolutely.
It's like so unforgivable that like there's no like twist of logic that I can apply to this situation to be like, oh, well, maybe I can.
No, I mean, it's
out.
A disgusting human rights yeah. violation. And this just can't be one of the things that the media sweeps under the rug next week when something
yeah.
else outrageous happens.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever Michael Avenatti digs up.
Yeah. I mean, I do think the mainstream media was appropriately outraged, but this has sort of been a reality check for me in the sense that people really didn't seem to be like,
no,
Miles,
yeah.
you were talking about just some people you were noticing in comments.
Yeah,
sections.
Like I used to work in radio, and this one hip hop station I used to work at, I was looking at like basically a lot of radio stations on their social media, like on Instagram, were posting pictures of like the situation with these immigrants and saying like, hey, what do you think? And the comments, I was blown away by the number of Latinx people who were so indifferent to it, of just sort of like, well, that's not my problem. Or
right.
like, they should have followed the rules. Or even, like, just anybody of many, like, even younger people, people of color who are just like, well, you know, if you break the rules, like, I don't know what to do. Like, they should just stay where they are. And it was really disheartening to see that, because you're even now seeing people of color sort of adopt this sort of, like, American privilege of just sort of like, well, I'm fine.
I'm
good.
Fine.
So
I'm American.
That doesn't apply yeah. to me. It's this sort of apathy that I was really sort of blown away by, that even people who are probably have real connections to this kind of issue were just so easily dismissive of it.
I think people are going numb.
Yeah.
And that's what I was afraid of from the very beginning of this presidency. I'm like,
yeah.
we're going to hit this place where people finally go numb. And I think that's it's happening right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the other thing is that the having a right-wing propaganda machine, having Drudge, who is only today was only reporting about how poor the circumstances were during the Obama administration. He wrote, Obama wrapped them in foil and caged them, referring to the marathon blankets people used and still use at these facilities. And just, you know, the Fox News of the world. I don't know, like we've used Watergate in the past as a touchstone for, you know, a completely corrupt administration and like what happens. And we talked about how there was, you know, broad support and for a lot of Watergate. People were like, yeah, but it's a complicated story. We're sure the president has nothing to do with it. And it was only after, like, at the very end of the story, did people start giving a shit and, like, his approval plummeted. But I really think that it doesn't make sense to use that as a touchstone anymore, because we exist in a world where there's just, you know, those people who are saying that they shouldn't have broken the rules are also saying you can't trust the media. And
right.
The whole thing has worked. Like,
yeah.
By having Fox News, having something on the right that is, you know, not telling the truth and that is basically a propaganda machine, and opposing that to the mainstream media that is focused on telling the truth without any bias, the mainstream media becomes the left and people are actually, you know, buying that, it seems like.
Right.
And I don't know. I really think that this story has been an illustration of the fact that we don't have a solution to that problem. There's no way to combat Fox News other than to create a Fox News for the left, because I just don't think they're.
But how would you even spin this even more left? Like, what's the propaganda?
That would work. I mean, current TV didn't work.
Right.
I worked there,
yeah,
so I'm allowed to say that.
Right. Yeah. No. Exactly.
So I don't even know if that's the answer. You know, and to Miles' point that these comments are also coming from a younger generation.
Yeah.
You know, these are people who grew up on blogs, not necessarily newspapers,
yeah, right.
And grew up on Facebook, and they believe fake news is a real thing and a real problem. I don't know how we combat that.
Right. Yeah, I don't either. We've tried. Air America didn't work.
Air America did not work either.
Podcasts are sort of a solution, but that's really the only place you're seeing a consistent voice that people are paying attention to that is sort of combating
the Ben Shapiro shows like at the top of the news charts too.
Yeah.
So that, you know, there's
no, for sure.
The right is doing a good job of inoculating their base too.
Yeah. I mean, one of the ways people have been trying to combat this or, you know, express their outrage over this is people who are showrunners for Fox shows, like on the entertainment side.
Yeah.
You know, Seth MacFarlane, the Family Guy dude, and and the showrunner for Modern Family, which airs on not Fox, I think it airs on ABC.
Yeah.
But I think
it's produced by Fox,
and they're, you know, at least expressing some outrage, but I don't know what that's necessarily doing.
Well, I think it does matter, you know, because the bottom line is what matters to companies at this point.
And sadly, though, in this country, you also have to have money. Those are the people who really have the power, because clearly we can only do so much, like with our boycotting or like demonstrating. But, you know, what really moves the needle is this idea that like, oh, we're going to hurt the bottom line.
The bottom line.
Yeah,
and that's really, and it's all that matters. And it's, as long as we know that, it's fine. So it's like, let's think about how we can hurt the bottom
line. Yeah, exactly. Line. Like, I mean, there should be just a full on boycott on everybody who advertises on Fox after this week and like the crazy nonsense that they were talking today and trying to give their viewers like the help to rationalize why this evil shit was worthwhile.
Yeah.
This is now like when we're getting into the kind of rhetoric that even like Tucker Carlson was spewing, which was just like this dehumanizing of immigrants and kind of like being like they're irreversibly changing our culture and shit like that.
Right.
This sort of white nationalism, that is just, it's dangerous. And
yeah,
it's
Tucker Carlson was talking about how, you know, these people want us to worry about immigrant children instead of our children, which is like, oh, who are we versus who are they?
Who's this us and them?
Well, it's also just, there's a complete disconnect. Like, those two things don't have anything to do with each other
at all.
And also, can we talk about the fact that the right isn't taking care of our children either?
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, right is doing nothing to shore up help for our children.
The one thing that we've seen is that the GOP has fully invested in the white supremacist capitalist patriarchy platform. You know, they want to ensure that the country stays as white as possible. They clearly have no regard for women, mothers, especially at the border. And the capitalism side of this whole thing is really, you know, disturbing, because if you think about it, there were so many opportunities for Republicans to fix this.
Yes.
And they just didn't. Why? Because of this whole idea of this white supremacist capitalist world we live in, this government that we're operating in. So the president could have easily just ended it before having to do this in executive order. He could have just told Jeff Sessions, yo, my guy, we're not doing this anymore.
Right.
But he didn't do that. He said, the Democrats, blah, 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 and just was just obscuring the facts. The Republicans in the House could have introduced a narrow bill that was just specifically about this, and it would have passed overwhelmingly from all the reporting. Like, everyone was like, yeah, we'll vote for that. That's fine.
Yep.
But they tried to sneak it in with some other immigration stuff to make our immigration laws
more hardline.
They were
holding the kids hostage.
Yeah, exactly. One GOP senator could have said, I'm voting with the Democrats for any further confirmations you want to push through Mitch McConnell. And guess what? At that point, you're going to have some trouble. And that would have forced Mitch McConnell to deal. two Republicans could have said, we're going to caucus with Democrats now and change the Senate math. And Mitch McConnell would have effectively been minority leader at that point.
But no one did it.
But no one did it. Not even these people like Jeff Flake and Bob Corker, who were talking all that shit. Like, once they figured out they were going to retire and they want to be like, oh, this is disgusting, I would never do it. They were silent. They did. Silent in the sense that they said cool stuff and tweeted nice things.
Yeah, God bless that. But no, it's silent and they didn't do anything.
Yeah, and it's not really surprising when you look at both of those men have taken money from private prison companies.
Of course they
which
have.
Are the group who is really actually, you know, really profiting off of this whole thing. Because at the end of the day, you know, there are people who, as I said, I see in the comments, they are completely confused. They're like, well, I don't know about the news. This could be fake. You know, this could be propaganda. Like, they should go wherever. Like, they're not my problem. This is all just, you know, confusion that is sown from the top to make people fight with each other, because really it's about these companies and whoever to can make a profit off of, you know, commodifying the immigration issue.
Yeah.
And when you look at just the facts about it, like, it's no surprise. So, like, in the week following the 2016 election, stock prices for the country's two biggest prison companies rose by around 30%, mostly because the promise came from the Trump administration that they weren't going to do what the Obama administration did anymore, which was moving away from doing business with private prison companies.
Right.
Like, as of August 2016, nearly three quarters of the average daily immigration detainee population was held in facilities operated by one of these private prison companies. And also, private prison corporations, they lobby on immigration and immigrant detention issues that affect their bottom line. So they like to lobby around a lot of the policy. So this one company, CoreCivic, they spent $9.7 million, which was basically 61% of total private prison lobbying expenditures that year, where they were lobbying directly to the DHS Appropriations Subcommittee, which maintains all the immigrant detention quota language and shapes the way sort of that all these laws are interpreted. So they know, like, the more they can put their hands all over these laws, they can ensure things like, you know, minimum detainees and things like that to keep their profits high. Now, when you actually look at sort of how much money they've made over, like, the last few years, I mean, the profits are astronomical just in the last few years. And again, the two biggest private prison companies, CoreCivic and the GEO Group, they dominate this whole industry. And they, I think, run like 80% of the detention centers. So these are the people who are really... This is the reason why Trump is also like, I'm not going to divert any judicial resources to this to address the backlog of cases that need to be heard.
Right.
Because if you keep them in longer, then there's more money to be made by these companies.
Yeah. Seems like the executive order doesn't get in the way of any of that because it's just holding families there indefinitely. So these, you know, private prison companies will still do it.
And I also want to say, throughout all of this, Democrats, their hands are not clean either in all of this.
No,
you know,
of course
Clinton
not.
Expanded mandatory immigration detention in 1997. The number of family detention beds went from dozens to over 3,000 in 2014 under Obama's administration. You know, he even defended his unaccompanied minor policies by saying stuff like, hey, well, don't send your kids here because they'll get sent back. Like, we have to just sort of begin to change the conversations we have around this issue, because this is like we're just creating a new population, a new prison population for these companies to profit off of.
It already had to have been really bad for the Trump administration to go like one click worse, and suddenly it's like a human rights like violation.
Right, that's
outrage.
Where we were.
Right,
yeah.
We were already in a bad position. So, you know, they are able to pull out Obama administration shit because the Obama administration wasn't great on this. But
no,
that doesn't mean that going one click worse is an acceptable outcome.
No, no. There are going to be a lot of demonstrations this weekend. I hope people get out there. Because this is really the time when, just as Americans, like, we have to really be vigilant about this kind of things, because it's a slow boil into a country we don't even recognize. Who knows what it's going to look like 6 months from now?
Well, yeah,
and like what we've let slide.
And exactly. And like I said, I just hope that people remember it. And especially if people do get out there and demonstrate this weekend, I don't want people to go out. I mean, my issue with demonstrators is always, are you going out for like, to Instagram
that you're going to,
especially, and I saw that so much with the Women's March, and
it
was kind of disgusting. And don't go out just to get the likes, but go out and then follow up and do something and remember that this happened, because going back to talking about memory,
right?
Our memories are both fallible and they're fleeting right now.
Right.
And right now is the time that we have to be vigilant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when you're at those marches, if there are people, if there are organizations, community action groups that are out there saying, hey, do you want to sign up? Sign up.
Yeah.
Because all of these community organizations, they need people to show up in physical space to help out, to volunteer and do those things. And that's really, you know, that's really an important step in participating in all of this. It's not just about, yes, showing up to demonstration is great, but we also do have to put in our time as much as we can to, you know, to help.
And on the social media front, I mean, I really do think the idea of a boycott of Fox News advertisers, I mean, like you were saying, there are all these ways in which the other side is making money off of these human rights outrages. And so we need to find ways to make it less profitable for people to, you know, abuse people.
Yeah. Also Microsoft. They're like, yeah, we're helping ICE use the cloud to make faster decisions on how to deport children. So,
Yeah. I mean, I'd rather see someone Instagram, hey, I'm boycotting this advertiser, I'm boycotting this company, rather than Instagramming like an adorable, well-filtered picture of you with your cute sign. I mean, yes, go out there and make your sign, but like actually post something that is meaningful.
I mean, yeah, like especially like Laura Ingraham, like on her show when she tried to call these kids actors and said that they were in basically essentially summer camps.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know how many advertisers she has left. I know like John Deere is still one and a couple other people. I mean, I've never had the need for a John Deere piece of equipment, so
right.
I can count on the fact that I won't ever.
I'd like to ride a tractor.
That is a very clean demographic, like Venn diagram. They're just like, fuck you, man. Yeah. None of our customers give a shit about this, so you guys can all go fuck yourselves. But yeah, fuck John Deere, I think. You will not hear John Deere advertising on the Daily Zeitgeist.
Yeah.
We will turn down their ad dollars. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. And actually, an ad just came through. I was wrong about John Deere. John Deere's actually a great mower. They have awesome hats to wear when you're hunting.
I mean,
I don't know.
I mean, it's the brand name that most people trust in the world of forestry machinery, diesel engines, and drivetrains.
Hey, you said it, Miles. All right, so the number one trending thing on Google Trends this morning is actually restaurants.
Really?
Yeah, people just found out about these things, restaurants.
Never heard of them.
You go in there, they serve you food. They cook it for you. It's amazing.
Like Mom's House?
Yeah. This list just came out from the World's 50 Best Restaurants Academy, which
good name.
One of the best schools out there to send your kids to.
But who votes in this academy?
It's like thousands of international restaurant industry experts and well-traveled gourmands.
Oh, wow.
Also us.
Yeah. Similar to us.
People like us.
People who just like to flex on the gram with their food.
Yeah.
This is actually the best restaurant. I don't eat it.
So they start off with Osteria Francescana.
Osteria Francescana in Modena, yes. Number one.
Good for you. I couldn't believe that. I mean, I've only been there a couple times, but it's I've never been there. I've never been to any of these restaurants, but it sounded like you guys have been.
I've been to a couple.
Yeah, 11 Madison Park.
I've been to 11 Madison.
That's in New York City.
It's good.
Good hamburger.
I don't think it's, you know, it's perfectly fine. I have some issue with this list.
Okay.
I have some issues with this list.
What's your issue?
I don't know how much I don't think we know enough about the people that made this list.
Right, yeah, like, who the fuck are you?
Who are you?
And how come Noma isn't on this list? It wasn't,
Noma Garcia Parra?
Noma Garcia Parra, yes. Uh-huh. No, Noma
in Copenhagen. Yeah.
Rene
Rezrepi's restaurant.
I mean, look, I have issues with lists in general. I'm like, this is all just spam crap. Uh-huh. And anyone that is, you know, making their travel plans based on these lists, I question you.
So what's your list then? What's the number one restaurant in the world?
Oh my gosh, that's so hard.
IHOB?
IHOB. Denny's.
IHOB.
Denny's.
Oh, Denny's, yes.
The
yes.
Waffle House. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm pretty lowbrow, so I mean, you shouldn't listen to anything that I say. But
like,
Blue Hill at Stone Barns is in here, and also an excellent restaurant. I think I need to know more about what their criteria
is. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, El Bulli was one of the best restaurants for so long in Spain, and I just went to their new restaurant, Tickets, which is in Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's on there.
It was indeed fantastic because it was like a circus of food.
Oh, right. Really?
Yeah.
Because it's only 32 on this list. I'm surprised that impressed you.
Just behind Tommy Burger.
I thought Tickets was way better than Blue Hill at Stone Barns.
Okay. So we need to do some investigating who these people are.
Yeah. I feel like also there's this sort of thing where these are like a whole type of experience where it is an experience.
It's
like
an
going
experience.
To these restaurants, yeah. like yeah. there's like all these people waiting on you, and it's just like, I don't know. There are also really good restaurants that are like hole in the wall taquerias, and
which
Los
I
Angeles.
Think are the best restaurants.
Right.
Is the hole in the wall taqueria. Yeah.
It's more of a surprise too when you're like, oh my God, I'm having religious experience in this shipping container.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and my thing, and you know, I was a travel writer for a long time too, and people were like, how do you find great restaurants? Do you look at these lists? And I'm like, fuck no. I ask taxi drivers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like taxi drivers know where to eat at all hours of the day and night. And they know what's cheap and what's good.
Yeah, yeah.
And how to stretch your dollar in a different country. And so I stopped paying attention to these silly lists.
Yeah. I feel like the hole-in-the-wall taqueria's marketing teams tend to be less sophisticated than, you know, these crazy five-star
white tablecloth restaurants.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There are new EU rules on internet copyright that could basically mean a meme ban.
Yes. So the European Parliament, in their legal affairs committee, they basically approved a new set of copyright rules, which includes this one segment of it that basically some critics are saying is like it will create a meme ban, essentially. So this Article 13 would make internet platforms like Facebook and Twitter, they are now responsible for preventing users from uploading copyrighted material or content to the site. So they'll basically have filters like they do on YouTube to keep out copyrighted material. So a lot of these critics are saying that they're essentially going to end like memes because they use copyrighted material. So you won't see Distracted Boyfriend or SpongeBob or whatever the other.
How will they communicate?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm panicking.
Distracted Boyfriend.
Yeah. I mean, Distracted Boyfriend is that meme.
Right.
But yes, there are a lot of people who are like, this is going to be insane because it's going to keep us from doing this kind of internet culture stuff, which makes sense.
That, but in a European accent.
Yes,
right?
yes.
Yeah.
Which.
This is going to be. Was that good?
Okay. Well, Italian American Defamation League. Please call Jack.
Wow.
No.
So they, you know, we'll see what happens. I think a lot of people, proponents of this, are like, oh, they're overreacting. But I think there's also a good case to say, like, oh, we're also seeing like just automated policing of like internet activity too, where like I don't see how posting a Distracted Boyfriend meme is taking money out of someone's pocket.
It's absolutely not. No, and I'm the automated policing isn't what we need. That's not the answer.
Yeah.
Internet companies. Yeah. No, I mean, we need thoughtful change from companies like Facebook and Twitter. And we don't just need AI bots.
Right, right. To do the work for them.
My accent was supposed to be a London accent, by the way.
Oh, mate.
Not
safe, mate. Not safe.
Well, I think that's everything, right? We don't have anything else, do we? Oh, wait. World Cup date time.
What? Oh, shit. It's the World Cup date. Okay, wow. So, it's your boy, Miles, here with the World Cup date. Starting off with a few stories. To start off the World Cup date, first I want to talk about some of the results this morning. Portugal proved that they are a one-man team and overly reliant on Cristiano Ronaldo because were it not for his contributions, I don't think the team would be capable of doing much.
Has he scored all their goals so far?
Yes,
he has. Right? He scored three in the first game and then one today.
Yeah.
Damn,
so, but shout out to him. He's got four goals.
I know,
but,
seriously.
All at the same time, the way they played against Morocco was very uninspired, to say the least.
Yeah.
And Morocco deserved to win that game, but sadly they lost. And so that'll be their last match. They've crashed out of the tournament, but shout outs to you, Morocco. But in more important news, I've just been looking at sort of what's been going down for the fans out there in Russia right now. And apparently the new report is that just Russia in general, they are running out of beer because these soccer fans are too turned the fuck up and they're drinking they basically are drinking Moscow dry. They cannot keep up with the demand for the beer that these fans have. I know in some parts of the country, the Aussies, the Socceroo fans, they basically drank like an entire city dry, tapped every keg of beer that was available, drank all the beer. The Swedes also did the same in another city because they were celebrating like their first World Cup win in like 14 years or something like that. So it was basically, it's a very celebratory thing, but I still do not know how you let this happen because
How do you not anticipate this?
Is literally the biggest sporting event on earth.
And you
run out of beer.
Yeah, beer is literally the one thing you need.
Yeah.
For this sporting event.
I don't know if they, I don't know.
It's like running out of booze at your wedding. You're like, what? Are people going to want to drink there?
Oh, my goodness. Have you been to a wedding where the booze runs out?
I have been to a wedding where the booze runs out. And I'm like, you failed.
Painful. Yeah, you almost feel bad for them. You're like, ooh, I know you don't like this because you just took an L at your wedding. Anyway, yes, they have completely failed us, the consumer, with their lack of beer. Now, on to more problematic things. Russian Burger King, they're so... which already sounds like it's going to be...
also run
it's
out
already
going to
be a problem. They had a very weird social media campaign where they were saying, hey, ladies of Russia, if you get knocked up by a professional soccer player, we will give you 3 million rubles, which is like $47,000, and free Whoppers for life. And our people were like, yo, what the fuck is this? And it came down pretty quickly, and they're saying, like, we really apologize for this.
$47,000 is not that much money.
Right.
Well, yeah, but when...
But free Whoppers for life.
Free Whoppers for life.
I would definitely eat $47,000.
Double Whoppers?
Yeah.
I mean, what are the restrictions
Just
here?
Get two and then...
Bam.
Put them together. You got a double whopper. I mean, yeah, I mean, with the wage income gap is a chasm. I'm sure $47,000 goes a long way.
Right.
But yeah, that's a very, that's cool. So they were just
Russia is struggling with population, keeping their population where they want it to be. And,
right.
And they've created a holiday that is basically Valentine's Day, but for fucking and procreation.
But they also don't love immigrants. So are they saying they want you to have sex with only Russian soccer players?
No, they were fine with that part. I know there was a woman who, a member of parliament or Russian government who was like, don't get no foreigners.
No, right? Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the whole thing is very confusing.
Yeah, I mean,
just
I think,
who should I have sex with, Russia? Yeah. Tell me.
Just
shout
tell
out
me.
To Deanna on Twitter for sending that my way moments before the recording. So you just snuck that one in. But yeah, cool. I mean, Russian Burger King sounds like a cool band name. So
right. and is that's going to do it for our World Cup date?
I think it will do it. Yes. Until the Spain and Iran match is happening as we speak. So we've put that aside. We've delayed the viewing of that so Anna and I can scream at the TV together.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's crazy that Morocco is as good as they are. They have
they've got some good players. They
have
a lot of
population
of
one of our U.S. states.
Right.
And they...
Well, that's because the U.S. does not invest in getting everyone to play soccer. It's it's not as easily available to everybody as it is in other countries.
Right. Well, Joe, it's been wonderful having you.
Thank you guys for having me.
Where can people find you, follow you, listen to you?
Well, so Committed Pod is available in Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And we're on Instagram as Committed Pod, at Committed Pod. And I'm at www.joepiazza.com, which is where all my books live.
Wonderful. Nice. And Joe, what's a tweet that you've enjoyed recently that you want to share with our listeners?
So I have to say, I really like the Kate Berlant tweet, forever haunted that Carrie Bradshaw didn't vote.
Oh.
Wait, is that true? Carrie Bradshaw didn't vote?
Carrie Bradshaw's a fictional character, Jack.
I know, but is that like a plot point where she didn't vote?
She didn't vote. It is.
No, yeah.
It is indeed. She was too busy buying shoes.
Yeah,
that's why Trump won.
She did buy a lot of cool shoes, though. I mean,
they were really nice.
Yeah. Miles, where can people find you, follow you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray. And a tweet that I think would be hilarious and great is if somebody in Copenhagen or England can give me some recommendations, because your boy will be in the UK, bruv. In the EU, man, next week. And I need all the love I can get and recommendations I can get. So,
Miles
yes.
refuses to tell you about interesting tweets.
No, every time I use it to be just a self-servicing moment in the show.
All right. And my tweet of the day is from Katie Stoll, wonderful actress who worked with us a lot at Crack. She tweeted, a really good question. Did the idiom screwed the pooch originate when someone tried to do something but accidentally fucked a dog instead? That was a really good question.
Yeah.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien. You can follow us at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as the song we ride out on. Miles, what's that going to be?
This is just kind of a boom bap instrumental hip hop beat from the golden era of hip hop. It's not from the golden era, but it harkens to those times. This is a song called Crystal Silence by Psalm Trees. And I just love a little bit of a piano sample with that just old school boom bap rhythm behind it. It had me freestyling in my car on the way here. And I don't even rap anymore. So, yes, check out this track, Crystal Silence.
I would never have the balls to name something Crystal Silence. That means these people are way cooler than me.
Way cooler.
So cool.
Crystal Silence.
Crystal
dude.
Silence, man. Think about it. All right. Well, we're going to ride out on that. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. We'll talk to you guys then.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. That's beautiful.
Most.